Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, I guess, like, Syracuse back in the top 25 for the first time in 17 years. Week is probably the theme, if I had to guess.
We're ranked. This is great.
We are ranked in both polls, in both of the classic polls. Obviously, the college football playoff poll comes out tomorrow night. And I think that's what they use for, like, having your name ranked in the broadcast. So we actually do want to kind of crack that one, even if we don't actually have, like, legitimate playoff hopes. But either way, like, pretty crazy that this is where we are.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't want to throw, like, water on this or anything. But, you know, we are benefited from the fact the ACC is, like, entertainingly down this year. But at the same time, like, you can see a lot of what's come together for Syracuse, especially on offense, that's allowed for this to happen this year. The fact that we could easily be 7-1 or even 8-0 is not lost on me. Nonetheless, really happy at 6-2, really happy that we're ranked, really happy that we're going to a bowl. And I think, you know, hopefully this gets Orange fans, you know, as excited as they should be. And not to, I don't want to say anything else about attendance other than, hope everybody's there on not this coming Saturday, but the Friday night after, when we have a short week to go up against a very bad Louisville team.
Yeah, I really hope that A, we beat Wake Forest this weekend, which is a very manageable expectation. I think Wake's not bad, but and it's on the road where we've had like very mixed results. But I don't want to be a one and done ranked team. I'd like to stick around for a bit, and also doing so I think would really help move forward in terms of like what that Friday night game in Louisville will look like in terms of fans in the stands. So it'd be nice to pack that thing and get like 45,000-46,000 people there, because this team I think deserves that.
Yeah, they deserve it. And I mean, this is the last time you're gonna see, you know, guys like Eric Dungy, Jamal Custis, a bunch of others like at home. There's no reason why, you know, SU fans shouldn't show up. I'm sure they'll find reasons, but you can't pick apples at night. You can't rake leaves at night.
It's just a weird choice.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't. I would very much hope that SU fans show up for this one, even if you haven't shown up all year. Now is a good time to start. Get on the bandwagon. Say you were there the whole time when we go to a bowl game. That's probably the Pinstripe Bowl. In any case, yes, I think we'll talk Wake Forest a little bit in the second half. I think that's going to be an interesting game. I'll just leave it at that for now. The run game is a little terrifying on their end, and their defense is just as porous as ours. So I think, if anything, the only certainty is that bet the over, and that it'll probably look something like, at least in terms of total points, last year's shootout at the Dome.
Yeah, I think that's a fair expectation. I don't think Matt Colburn is going to run for 250 yards against us. Luckily, we didn't pull his scholarship offer like 2 days before signing day, so I think he probably got that out of his system. But overall, like, Wake's offense is interesting. It's been a bit up and down, but they can score points as they showed last week. But they also lost to Florida State by multiple touchdowns and got crushed by Clemson. So, like, in terms of, obviously, I preach against this every week, but in terms of, like, shared opponents, we handled both much better than they did. So, if that does mean anything, which is always up in the air, you know, it definitely leans Syracuse. Also, like, I think we opened as, what, like, a 4.5, 5-point favorite on the road, which seems about right.
We opened at 6.5 initially, and then it drifted down to 4.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, so, I don't know. I'm still a little nervous, as I do think there's a possibility of this being like a letdown spot for us being on the road. It's a nooner, right?
It is as anyone would expect with Syracuse and Wake Forest. It's a nooner on your local Raycom station.
Nice. Yeah. So we'll see. I hope this everything of the last couple of days doesn't kind of lead into a flat week from our team. But you know, we'll find out. I think if anyone can avoid that, it's probably Dino Babers. Clearly, he has kind of the juice in terms of getting these guys motivated. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. But I would like to stay in the top 25 for more than a week. So let's make that happen.
Yeah, and honestly, if we, knock on wood, if we can win the next two, we have a chance to stay in the top 25 for the rest of the season, depending on, you know, if you can keep it close against Notre Dame and then beat Boston College potentially.
Yeah, I mean, if Notre Dame isn't like a complete, like, I mean, even if it is, like, we're so far into the year where week-to-week stuff matters a little bit less. Obviously, the polls are very reactionary just because they're done by humans. But I think if we lost, you know, by a decent amount to Notre Dame, who obviously the polls really like, but we finished 9-3, I would find it very hard to imagine that we would fall out of the polls unless, like, a bowl game went really poorly or something.
Yeah, I had to agree there. But not to get ahead of ourselves, I want to talk a little bit about what happened this past week first. That first quarter was a lot of fun. I wouldn't expect that for every quarter this year, but if we want to do anything resembling it, at least once a game, that'd be awesome, because 24-7 advantage, throwing the ball all over the yard, Dungy looking like he regained whatever arm strength and accuracy that he had lost for much of the last month was great. And, you know, as we discussed kind of last week and many weeks, like, when you're facing a team like NC State or a lot of others who don't necessarily play at our pace, having them playing from behind and becoming a one-dimensional offense is a great way for Syracuse to get a win.
Yeah, obviously we were aided by the fact that Ricky Person was out, and Reggie Gillespie, I think, actually like left the game for a bit, and he wasn't super effective. They only ran for 2.3 yards per carry as a team. So we were able to make them one-dimensional. That one dimension was quite good. Ryan Finley had an awesome game.
After the poor start, too, he was absolutely on a tear, just played pitch and catch for like the last three quarters of this game.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that Kelvin Harmon just literally made every play you could possibly imagine. It was like it's one of the better performances we've probably ever seen from an opposing receiver at the Dome, honestly, and it gets overshadowed by a 10-point loss for them, which I'm okay with. I saw some people raising the comparison to apparently, obviously I was too young to remember it, but the Torrey Holt game for NC State against us, I think one of the first times we played them. Torrey Holt, like, apparently just did things that, you know, would lead you to think that Torrey Holt might be a good NFL receiver down the road against us. So, you know, shout out to Kelvin Harmon, who will go on to be a borderline Hall of Famer for the Los Angeles Rams. But, you know, we had our own, I mean, we were, as we've seen for these last couple of weeks, we were really well-rounded on offense. We, in terms of the receiving game, at least, they did a good job of shutting down our running game. But we had four guys over 80 yards, three caught touchdowns, and it was the four that we talk about every week, Custis, Harris, Johnson, and Riley, especially Riley this week, who, after kind of an up-and-down start in the first half with the penalty on the punt and everything else, just had an unbelievable game catching the ball. Hit, I would say, pretty safely, but his best game offensively of his career. Just was open. He got himself open like every time we needed him to, and made some. The snag on the I think it was a second and long where he high pointed the ball and got a huge first down. Just like always found himself available and just made every play you could ask for on offense, and really impressive from him.
Yeah, I mean, you and I talked about this early in the season. Like, his emergence, and it didn't have to be to this extent even, but his emergence was really going to be key to this offense, because he filled in that Eric Phillips role that you know, Phillips played so well in the last couple seasons. Like, Riley has actually kind of evolved the role a bit, as Nyheim Johnson's become, you know, kind of this really great hybrid deep threat slash screen guy, similar to really the way I think they use Ishmael in the second half last year. Riley has become this guy who's just exploiting teams and, you know, up the seam. He's finding space behind the line. Like, he's not, you know, being like your typical screener, like a 5'7 guy would normally be, but his speed is impossible to guard one-on-one. The announcers were talking about it the entire game. And yeah, he did what he needed to do. I mean, it's not even as if that 164 yards was just based on that 48-yard bomb that he caught from Dante Strickland, which a great play in and of itself. But like, Riley in general just always seemed to be in the right place at the right time. He only had one drop. Obviously, that would end up not being as critical penalty on the roughing the punter play was not good. I'm not really sure why we brought the house on that one anyway, but in any case, like, more than redeemed himself on the offensive end. And even if Riley can do like half of that per game, giving five catches and 80 yards, like, I think that's still a really big presence for Syracuse, and something that's going to be worth watching the rest of the season. I know I'm pretty sure our own Brandon Ross is going to be talking to Riley this week at practice, so hopefully we have some more kind of from him, especially on how the season's gone so far and how it's going to go the rest of it.
Yeah, and just this whole receiving core has become so well-rounded. I don't know how you effectively cover us. It forces, especially, and also considering our rushing game, you know, we're averaging 4.5 yards a carry. That's very solid, especially coming from where we were. And we have 4 really legit rushing threats. So this offense has just become so difficult to guard because you have to put someone who can match up somewhat physically with Custis, and that's obviously a challenge for most teams to begin with. But then Riley, Johnson, and Harris are all such different players and all do different things so well, but all are playing at such a high level right now. You have to commit a lot of you're either putting yourself in a mismatch by covering one of them with a linebacker. I think Riley found himself a linebacker coverage a couple times, which is just impossible for the other team. And most safeties aren't guarding these guys effectively. And then if that's the case, then you're spreading things out for Neil Strickland, who's had a quietly, I think, a really nice year, doing like both. I mean, his rushing numbers are on an average, because we're, you know, changing things up so much, but on an average basis are the best of his career. And then Dungy, obviously, if you spread everyone out and you give Dungy a running lane, he's going to gain 20 yards. So it's, we've just become a very, very, very well-rounded, pretty impossible to guard team, I feel like. And that's a good place to be.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you're starting to see something resembling maybe a little bit of what we thought was going to happen, but like, I think Strickland did seem to take over as like the back in this one. I feel like, you know, the announcers alluded to this too. I think Mo Neal did start off in the doghouse a little bit because of the late fumble last week, even though Syracuse did pull off the win. Neal only had 5 carries for 17 yards in this one, but did have 1 catch for 11 yards. I feel like he'll work his way out of whatever funk he was in. I do like either him or Strickland being used in the passing game. Both of them had a reception in this one, but Neal had the longer one. He was 1 for 11, while Strickland was 1 for -3. But again, Strickland also had a 48-yard completion downfield. That was really nice, and I'm glad that, you know, all the different iterations we've had of that, you know, wide receiver pass, I feel like Strickland as the guy throwing the football is always going to be the best option, just because I feel like, you know, I know Butler had some time at quarterback too in high school, but since Butler's been used less and less and Strickland's on the field a lot, I feel like with Strickland, it's not the dead giveaway. And it was nice to see, you know, something like that work. I think in general, this play calling, the second quarter was a little weird. But other than that, this play calling was great. It was wide open. It was aggressive. I feel like the play calling, you know, late in the fourth, I know I was tweeting about it saying like, you know, this defense can't really stop anybody. So like, you're kind of just going to have to keep running your offense, albeit at a slightly slower pace. And credit to Syracuse. Like, they had that really bad holding call that that wasn't even necessary. I think I forgot who was the culprit there. But Dungy had that big first down, and then it was called back. And then they had to give the ball back to NC State, which set up the interception from Andrew Armstrong later. But like, SU stayed aggressive. They ran right at NC State. They threw the ball a ton. Dungy, I felt like, had one of his smarter running games in general. I feel like he didn't try to do too much. He had some, you know, big pickups, a couple big first downs. And like, for me, like, that's really what Dungy should probably try to limit himself to. He had that one big hit probably toward the sideline that I didn't love. But in general, I think I'd say this is one of his top 5 games at SU for sure, just because of how smart he was with the football and also how smart he was just as a passer. You know, 27 to 38, and there were a couple drops in there. And he delivered some really nice deep balls, probably better throws down the field than we've seen from him in at least a year, if not like 2.
Yeah, I'm kind of going through his game log now. I think you could make the argument that this was, in considering the context of the game, I think it could go down as his best game at SU so far. He's obviously had plenty of really nice ones, but considering what was on the line and also like what he was, I struggle to call it adversity, but like, there was a very legitimate question as to whether he was going to lose his job. I mean, we talked about it last week when he looked a little shaky in the second quarter. Dino put DeVito in, like,
yeah, like immediately,
and that was clearly the plan. Like, we're going to ride the hot hand and find who's going to win us a game. And I think Stephen Bailey had a really nice piece on this yesterday. Dino, for, you know, I think we're very on board with Dino. We both want to see him here for the long term. I think every game there's like a spot of like weird play calling that we get confused about, pretty much. I know it definitely happened in the second quarter in this game, but he has handled this quarterback, I wouldn't even call it controversy, but he's handled this quarterback situation so with such a deft touch And we don't win the game if not for how Dino's handled the quarterbacks in completely different ways in two straight weeks. And that's just very impressive, because you run with a quarterback change, you run the risk of alienating obviously huge players in your team. You run the risk of you know, players disagreeing with your decisions, and you know, even if they don't say it, like, you can kind of demoralize a team if you don't do the right thing, even if they're not going to like rebel against you or anything. But it does have an impact, and he's handled it with basically, I mean, he made the right perfect call 2 weeks in a row, and they were very different calls, by trusting Dungy to get, you know, back on track at halftime of this game, and also by making the poll last week. So really huge by him, and Dungy obviously responded, and I think we probably should have known that Dungy would respond at least somewhat like this, because he's just been a warrior his whole career. So it would have been weird for him to go out the way that some people thought he might be.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he can stay healthy for these last four games and then get to a bowl game, because honestly, like, other people said this on Twitter too, like, there's very few players in the country that deserve to start a bowl game and have that opportunity than Dungy, no matter where that game is. I think he's been such a gamer, such a warrior for us. And, like, you know, you and I talked about last week, and I'm not going to say that he proved us wrong. I don't think he proved people wrong. I think what he did was, he said it himself, like, he got a little too comfortable, and he took it as an opportunity. And, like, and this is where he put his leadership kind of, you know, first and foremost, is that he took it as an opportunity to kind of refocus himself and take a different approach to the game and really, like, really prepare. And I feel like you saw it immediately in this one, how well prepared he was, how his throws were crisp, how a lot of those issues that we had not, I don't know if there was an injury or not in the last few weeks, so we're never going to know, but the way that he was playing was significantly better, and looked more focused. It looked more just accurate in many ways than what we'd seen. Honestly, like, I give him all the credit. I think it was awesome that, you know, in that game too, he surpassed the 10,000 yard mark for total yards. It's amazing that, you know, no other Syracuse player has ever done that, especially McNabb. It goes to show too just how poorly a lot of the best players in Syracuse history have been used offensively. I mean, like, imagine McNabb, not to go off on a tangent, but, like, imagine McNabb in, like, this offense.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's just era too.
Oh, of course.
Offenses are much more open, but it's also crazy considering Dungy has not played a full 4 years. Like, he's going to go down as a 4-year quarterback, but he missed about, you know, almost not quite half of 3 seasons. He's missed at least a full season, I think, overall.
Just like 9 or 10?
4 games his freshman year, and he didn't start the first game. He came in relief. He missed 3 his sophomore year, and then last year he missed the 3 at the end. So, 10. So almost a full season, plus, like, some halves here and there. I think if you added up all the quarters or all the drives that he missed due to, like, taking a big shot or something, or getting benched for Tommy DeVito, yeah, he's probably missed about a full season of play. So it's pretty comparable to the time frame McNabb played 3 years. So, and I don't remember if he took over as a starter right away, but it's pretty comparable. And the numbers he's put up in that span of time is really impressive.
100%. I think, yeah, if you think about the fact that his numbers from the first season were, despite the fact that the offense was a complete shit show, like, Dungy,
you're really good. I'm looking at the game log from 2015. He had some awesome games.
The Wake Forest game was awesome. Yeah. Absolutely great.
I don't know why he only threw 13 passes in that game. I don't remember well enough.
I mean, one of them was that, like, 97-yard bomb or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, I mean, he played the whole game because Hutton was already out.
Well, because we were running an option offense and running Ben Lewis jet sweeps.
We ran 37 run plays. We only ran, I mean, this offense was so dumb. We only ran 51 plays offensively.
That's
Wake Forest ran 77 for not a super fast offense. And we won somehow, pretty comfortably.
Well, we broke
it. It was bad that year, but
we broke it open with that long, long pass from him. And then I think after that, like, it was just, we had the annual freak injury to Wake Forest against us, which didn't happen last year. I don't know if it happened the year before either, which explains why we lost those 2 games. But yeah, typically, like, somebody gets hurt And it's almost always a Wake Forest player for some
reason. It's always an important Wake Forest player.
Yeah.
It was the wide receiver who's on the Ravens.
Campanaro.
That was
2014. That 13-0 ugly.
Yes, I was at that game. It was horrible. It was that game, and then they lost Wolford, I think, in one of the games.
They
actually lost two quarterbacks in one of the games.
No, we set up the 2006 ACC title because we injured, what's his name?
Their quarterback, who was then replaced by...
Riley Skinner.
Riley Skinner, yeah. Yes.
We set up the Riley Skinner era.
I think we hurt... God, I feel bad joking about this as people were hurt, but it is bizarre that even going back to 2006 and... even those non-conference games we played with them before we joined the ACC, I think there were a couple of injuries as well. So just a strange confluence, and I don't think any of the injuries were ever Eric Dungy. So I think you would assume if there was a rash of injuries in a series like this, Dungy would have been one of them. But I'm pretty sure he's been clean through these Wake Forest teams.
Yeah, I can't find the article. But whoever is listening to this, feel free to search around, and you'll find. I think 2 years ago I wrote an article about the weird history between these two teams, and it's changed since SU's 4-game win streak was broken, but nonetheless, so some entertaining things, some of them injury related, some of them not, but more on that after halftime. We're almost there, I promise. Dan, any last thoughts here? I mean, I felt the defense played well in the latter half of the fourth quarter and most of the first quarter, and then all bets were off in the middle, though. At the same time, they're not bad, and I said this kind of in our Slack. I think Ward's good. I wouldn't be broken up if he went elsewhere, not because I want him to, just because I don't necessarily think that bringing somebody in is going to create a lesser result.
Yeah, I think our defense is what it is. I think the injuries have made it tough. We've kind of slow played it, but our defensive backfield right now is very piecemeal. And the guys who have come in have stepped up pretty well. Malafonwu and who else? We have Achille Williams playing more corner, but he's been involved all year. But we've been kind of forced into playing a lot of very young guys at expanded roles. So I think you have to take that into account. But they've made big plays. They held Clemson to 27 points, which I think you'll take. The Pitt game is a problem. They ran all over us. And the end of the Clemson game, us not being able to stop the run, was a big problem. But it seems like we've mostly shored that up the last 2 weeks.
Guthrie's been, moment. I think that's somebody who, has absolutely flipped things on a dime in terms of what he's done these past 2 weeks. Since we talked about the run game, and you saw Guthrie in particular was getting beat flat-footed in those Pitt and UNC in Clemson games, but then these last 2 games, Guthrie's been everywhere. Guys had 20 tackles in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's been awesome. Obviously, there was the stretch, the two Antoine Horty plays, and then which also involved a pair of big quarterback pressures by Alton Robinson. One of which led to the Andrew Armstrong interception, which sealed the game, or set up the touchdown to seal the game. Just overall, we're going to give up some points and some yards. NC State's offense their still position guys, I thought, were better than we thought they were heading in. Finley played his game and was awesome. But we actually, we only sacked him once, but he's only been sacked now 4 times this year, including that one. We actually got after him pretty well. We hurried him six times. Mm-hmm. We did a nice job of getting our hands in some passes, and then we made the big play at the end. And we talk about it all the time with this defense. There's going to be a little bit of bend don't break, but looking at the five factor spot score from Bill C, that whole breakdown really nails it. We created 2 extra scoring opportunities and 1 by 2 scores. That's exactly what happened. So everything else was pretty even across the board. Our yards per play were. Both in between 7 and 7.5. The two teams played very evenly on offense. Syracuse just had a field position edge by about 9 yards, which we talked about going in because our special teams are great. And that, even though we've now had some special teams mistakes the last couple of weeks, I assume we're still pretty high up in the S&P. We forced the big turnover and we just created more opportunities for ourselves and took advantage. And when you have two teams that are very evenly matched on offense and are playing at similar similar levels, like, that's going to be the difference.
Yeah, I think, you know, Back in the Pack had a great article last, I think, Thursday or Friday, just talking about how, like, Syracuse's offense isn't necessarily the weapon you need to worry about. It's the special teams. And I felt like, you know, I don't have, like, the field position numbers in front of me, but SU starting field position was pretty good most of the day, like, once again.
I think it was at 30 yards. I think it was a 30-yard line.
Which is still pretty good. I mean,
which is really good. I mean, you'll take, I mean, it's 6 yards better than a fair catch every time. So, on a kickoff. Yeah, our average field position was 30.9. Theirs was 21.6. So, that's basically a first down.
Right. Yeah, and that's huge. Like, and that's something that we've, that's a battle we've won all year. It's something, we've talked about this before, it's something that can be a little random, so I wouldn't necessarily, like, have that be the only reason why you're winning football games. If you're doing that, though, and having an offense that can put up 50 points a game, you're looking all right. I guess before we get into the half, I'll just say one thing. I don't know if you saw this, that tweet about the fact that we scored 50 points more times in this season than we had in, like, the, what was it, like, 15 prior seasons combined?
Yes, it was, 4 50-point games this year, and that was, I think it was 14 prior seasons.
Yeah, and then there was also the fact that this was, I think Seth Goldberg tweeted it out too, that it was in the first season we scored 50 points 4 times since like 1916 or something.
I think it was even before that. I think it was like early 1900, like first decade of the 1900s. I responded to the tweet. I can find it. But yeah, it was... It's not, and that year apparently we shut out two teams 69-0, nice, and also
double
beat
nice.
Manhattan College 144-0.
That's definitely I always run into that one when I'm looking at like scoring records. Yeah, that is the mark for most points in Syracuse history.
Which is appropriate, even though it came before 44 was a thing, but I don't think I'd even seen that one. Yeah, so 50 points 4 times this season through the media guide. He said he looked, and it's the first time they've done since 1904. That year, SU beat Clarkson and Allegheny 69-0 each. Niagara 52-4.
Yeah.
And Manhattan 144-0. Pretty good.
I'm a fan.
How long after did the Jaspers fold their football program? That's my question.
I would guess 1930s. If I had to, here, Dan, what have you been drinking? And then I will look that up while you're doing that.
I was going to look it up, too. I actually had a pretty late beer week. I think the only thing I remember having, and I forgot to check in, so I did it just now, I had a couple of Pumpkinhead Ales from Shipyard, which are, you know, I bring it up all the time now because we're in the fall. I have, you know, really enjoyed that one in terms of the pumpkin, but I pretty much stuck with, like, hard alcohol otherwise this weekend while in the Halloween spirit. So... hopefully get more on the beer game this week. It just was like kind of one of those weird weeks where it wasn't around all the time.
Fair enough. I know, plus we're doing it a little bit earlier this week. Well, not really, but earlier-ish. So Wikipedia says that their team was only around from 1924 to 1942.
So is this a different Manhattan?
They could. Wikipedia could also like not have registered Manhattan College's team earlier. So still TBD. I'll find a definitive answer and put it in the comments of the podcast when it goes up. On my end, I didn't have a ton to drink either, but I did have a few things. Decided to test the waters with bringing both the dog and the baby to a brewery just to sit out on the porch and grab a drink and hope that daughter didn't make too much noise. She didn't make any noise. So that was ideal. So I had a couple beers. I went to Smog City, had a Pure Rubus. It's a Flanders ale from them, and it was raspberry brown, so it was really had like some chocolate notes. It was really interesting. It wasn't like amazing, but it was pretty good. And then just kind of kept it light after that with a Lager Real, their Vienna lager that they put out recently. And also we picked up a 6-pack of Stone's kind of hazy Imperial IPA, Fear Movie Lions. And that one was pretty good. I would highly recommend it. You can have a pretty good hazy double IPA without waiting in line somewhere. And yeah, and much, much better price point than a lot of the kind of hazy IPAs that you're going to be buying while waiting in line outside of a brewery.
Nice. I'm looking at the 1904 Syracuse football Wikipedia, and apparently we played Allegheny at Yale Field in New Haven. Allegheny's at a Pennsylvania school. So that's one of the weirdest neutral site games I can ever remember.
That was probably like the plague or something.
The plague hit Central New York, so we had to get the team out.
Yeah, just move.
Why on earth? And we played Yale 2 weeks before that, so like, why?
Rotating home fields. We take your home field until we lose.
The Browns fired Hugh Jackson. Shocking news.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah. You were probably inspired by the Cavaliers firing Ty Lue.
Yeah, that would have been a fun bet to make. Like, who got fired first? I don't think anyone would have taken Ty Lue. Like, expect him to survive October.
They should just trade coaches. Have Ty Lue coach the Browns.
Ooh, I like this.
Make it happen, Cleveland. You have nothing, literally nothing to lose.
No. Both teams honestly probably have a lot to gain by losing, so.
Go for it. All right. Back to getting on topic, because I know we, I know Dan and I both have things to do today. sort of. Wake Forest is next. And like I mentioned, they run the ball really well. And while, yeah, there's no revenge factor here necessarily from Matt Colburn, I do think that Wake being one of the top 30 to 40 teams rushing the football in the country could pose a little bit of danger for us. Sam Hartman, the quarterback, who was once a Syracuse target, he's not like amazing, but he's fairly accurate and efficient with the football. He seems to do a lot with a little. Greg Dortch is also really good. I have nothing positive to say about their defense, similar to how most outside observers would have anything positive to say about ours.
Greg Dortch stares the hell out of me.
He wasn't even, dude, he didn't even play last year against us, did he?
I think he was out, but that dude is awesome.
Yeah, he's like, but the problem is he's like the only guy who's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's like having the year that like our guys would have the last couple of years, where like the rest of the team isn't doing much, but he's really, really good. But yeah, this is mostly centered on the rushing attack. They're pretty balanced overall. They've passed for 17, almost 1,800 yards, and they've rushed for a little over 1,800. But they've run the ball 408 times, so they will be very dedicated to the rush. And those top two guys, Colburn and Cade Carney, both over 5 yards of carry. It's a pretty dangerous rushing team overall, and hopefully not one that can just grind it out on us, because that's where we've had trouble this year.
Yeah, and it's funny too. I know I talked about this in like the opponent recap article that I put up this morning. Like, it seems like Pitt, whatever was wrong with them, whatever was wrong with Clemson, it seems like we helped both teams figure it out, because now they're just like grinding teams in dust. Although Clemson didn't even need to run, they just decided to like, you know, just try out something new against Florida State and not really run the ball. Which that has to be fun to have that luxury.
Yeah, Clemson's numbers this weekend, like actually like their like raw stats weren't even as impressive as the score would indicate. So I don't even know how that game was as lopsided as it was, but Clemson just turned Florida State into like
JV a weird team. Like,
yes, just it's unbelievable how far that program has fallen in really what 2 years since they won the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, record time. Strange. Looking up the two running backs for Wake Forest, they're pretty similar size. Carney's 5'11", 215. Colburn's 5'10", 200. So they're not bowling balls necessarily, but they're definitely guys who are going to get those, like kind of grind out those yards. That's probably why it's good that we have like three or four guys who can start a defensive tackle now, because we're probably going to need them. I think we are definitely playing a 4-3 in this one. I wouldn't really expect to see much of the 4-2-5 in this game like we saw a bunch last week. I'm very worried about this rushing attack, especially because, like, I mean, the Deacons play at a higher, like, pace. I mean, it's not, like, to the level we are, but I know that, like, they don't really like to slow it down. Clawson's done a really nice job of installing, like, not a spread necessarily, but a team that like can play. Oh yeah, they actually run more plays than we do.
That's impressive.
687 on the year.
I wonder if some of that's like us with the early games kind of letting our foot off the gas a bit, but the fact that they basically have like an up-tempo power running game does scare me, because that's how Pitt and Clemson beat us late in the game. But I think our rush defense has looked a lot better the last couple weeks, especially this past weekend against NC State. Hopefully, I think McKinley Williams missed this past weekend, right? So hopefully he's back.
I think he played a little bit.
Oh, I thought he was out completely.
He might have been. I didn't like really pay too much attention there. I just saw that I saw that him and Josh Black got the oar for this week.
Yeah, so that hopefully he is back and ready to go. That would be a nice addition. But when you have that kind of attack, like, you definitely want to have all hands on deck up front. And just being able to force this game into the quarterback's hands. Like, I think if we're able to do that and we make them go to Hartman a bit more, I think we're in good shape. But we just can't let them dictate the whole pace of play on offense if we want to go down there and get a big win, which overall I feel pretty comfortable about this one. But and I don't know if they're going to stop us. They've had some real trouble on defense against talented teams. But offensively, I do think if they're able to control the game on that side, it could be an issue.
Yeah, I'm looking now. They average the second most plays per game of anybody in the country.
Wow, I would not have guessed that at all.
Yeah, same. This is much more terrifying.
we are talking ourselves into panic here on a Monday morning.
Yeah, I'm not like panicked. I never bought the projections to begin with that we were like significantly better. It's really just going to be, similar to this past weekend, really. It's just a turnover is probably going to dictate, you know, who scrapes by in like a 50 to 40 something blowout.
Yeah. I think we've done pretty well starting hot, this season. I think we need to get on the board real early. Like, if we start like this game, like we did in Cincy State, Wake Forest will have a much harder time getting back in it. So if we can kind of take the air, I mean, their stadium doesn't have much air to begin with, but if we can take the air to the stadium early to what will probably be a pretty quiet noon crowd, I think we'll be in good shape. We can't start slow though, and luckily that hasn't been a huge issue. We've been pretty good about getting out of the gates fast. It's the second quarter or occasionally the third quarter that has posed the major issue. This week, actually, the third quarter was really good. But, like, one of those middle quarters is always the issue where we kind of get lax and then we have to get ourselves back rejuvenated. But first quarter, jump out fast, force them to throw, make a couple plays if we could, you know, get... I mean, have we had an interception every game on defense? I feel like it's close.
It's probably close. I can look.
Yeah. Just, you know, stick to our fundamentals. I think our team is... Part of the reason we've been, you know, we're 6-2 is that we do, like, going back to Bill C's five factors, like, we're really good at those five factors. We're better at those than we are, like, the other things that people look at quickly on, like, winning football. Like, our efficiency numbers aren't great. That's, like, the one piece that I think is missing, but...
Which is why we don't do well in S&P, because we are very inefficient.
But we dominate field position, we turn teams over, we don't turn the ball over very much... We just do those little things very, very well at a very high level and have not shot ourselves in the foot too much.
Yeah, and to confirm, we have intercepted the ball every game so far. Had two in the first one, three in the second, and then one each in the rest of the games, giving us 11 interceptions on the season, which is one of the top 10 figures in the country.
Turnover margin has to be like way up there. Dungy has like, I think we have five interceptions between the two quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think we have eight turnover. I think we've turned the ball over eight times. And we've turned the ball over eight times. I think we've turned other teams over like 19 times.
Yep. And then we punt the hell out of the ball. We're quite good on kickoff coverage. We have a field goal kicker who's missed two kicks all year, and they're both over 40 yards, and is perfect in extra points. Like, all the little things that you need to do in football games, this team has done very, very well. And that's why I think, you know, obviously we were going to have trouble against Clemson like anyone else, and the Pitt game was dumb. And a lot of our games are very close, but like there's a reason why we have come out in a pretty good way, despite the fact that we were running like a pretty razor thin margin where we could easily be 8-0, we could also easily be 4-4. Luckily, when you make winning football plays, that's where you come out on top more often than not. And hopefully that will be that we'll ride that to 8 or 9 wins, because that's very much in play now.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think that's, you know, 8, maybe 9 wins. I think 9 wins, more assuredly, is where you get out of that that pinstripe military box, and you start
looking at... Then we looked at, like, Camping World, right? We could possibly go to Orlando or...
Camping World's in play. Depends on what happens in the Coastal, too. Like, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that, like, we could reach, I mean, it would be the Peach Bowl this year, right? But, like, if for some reason, like, the Coastal completely cratered and we won out somehow, like, yeah, that's then Access Bowl's in play.
Or the Belk Bowl would be nice. I think 8 or 9 wins. I mean, 9 wins would probably put us in play for that. Assuming that all the Carolina schools will be a little too far below. Now, Duke could still, you know, win a bunch and get to, like, 8 wins, and maybe they would take it. But, like, UNC is not going to make a bowl. NC State will probably be floating around there as well.
I think if we get to 8 or 9, I feel like they might send us the Sun Bowl.
I wish they wouldn't.
Yeah, like, I mean,
obviously I'll be happy about with anything, but...
It's a prestigious game, just in the...
It's a prestigious game. It's always fun. It's just, like, El Paso is such a... We'd have to send some people.
I'd really like to go. If the Sun Bowl wants to pay for me to go, that's something we can discuss. But yeah, that's not really going to happen otherwise. One more thing about Wake before we move on to predictions and then some quick basketball notes. They let a really bad Louisville offense do whatever they wanted in this one.
Yeah, I think Wake's defense is very suspect.
Like, Juwan Pass was 30 for 54, which is not that efficient, but 358 yards and a touchdown. They ran for 174 yards despite being one of the worst rushing teams in the country. That is encouraging for us. I'm a big fan of what Wake is going to give us on defense here. So I'm going to make my prediction. I think Syracuse wins this one 48 to 41.
I'm actually going to go a little more optimistic than you this time. I'll go, since we score so much, I'm going to go Syracuse 44, Wake 31. I think we'll win comfortably. I think we'll be nervous for, like, into the third quarter, and I think we'll start to distance ourselves once Wake has to pass the ball.
I think that's a fair point. So, as we didn't mention on air, I'm going to talk a little bit about basketball here. James, our basketball editor, and I are going to have our basketball season podcast later today. Dan's usually a participant in that, so did want to give him some quick seconds to kind of talk through some basketball stuff, maybe offer a season prediction, because he's obviously been a big part of those season preview extravaganzas for the last 5 seasons. So, Dan, your 2 to 3 minute take on the Syracuse basketball season.
It'd be nice if we had a point guard that was healthy. I think that's a good start to hopefully the regular season. I don't know how long Frank's projected to be out. It sounds like we should have Jalen Carey in the next exhibition. I think we were, like, Bayham said he was optimistic about that. But, like, overall, I think you have to be impressed with, I mean, it's unfortunate that it's going to end up being, like, everyone's main takeaway from the first exhibition, but I think it's fair at this point. Buddy Boeheim looks really good. Buddy Boeheim, I think, is in a play. And I kind of assumed that he would do the freshman thing, and it still might happen, but, like, the freshman thing where Boeheim plays him early and then he kind of drifts from the rotation.
He's not drifting from the rotation.
No, he is such a true shooter. He's going to play this year. I don't think he'll be, like, you know, I think he'll probably still be the second or third guy off the bench, but, man, like, if we need some threes, that dude has one of the Twitter releases I can remember in recent Syracuse history. He looks really, really, really good shooting the ball. And Elijah Hughes, I'm very excited for. He just seems like a rock-solid guy who's going to get you double digits every night. I can see him, obviously, you know, it takes a while for the zone to click, but he's been here for a year. I think he will be a very good zone defender probably about midway through the season. And it just seems like he's going to be able to really take the pressure off Battle. Obviously, Battle didn't do much in the first game. I'm not worried about him at all. I just think we're going to be very well-rounded this year, and this should be a very, very fun team.
Yeah, it is funny that, like, everybody, all the usual, like, you know, haters were talking, like, in preseason, saying, like...
Of which there are many.
Yeah, of which there are many. Talking about how Syracuse doesn't, like, still doesn't have an offense, and they're not sure, like, what everyone was talking about. Like, well, I mean... No, I didn't call it on Buddy Boeheim, but, like, most Syracuse fans said, yeah, like, Elijah Hughes, even if he's not, you know, all conference, he's probably going to average, like, 12 and 5 a game, and, like, that's still something we didn't have last year. So, like, it doesn't have to be, like, Hughes doesn't have to be this, you know, like, force of nature. He literally just has to be something we didn't have last year, which is, like, a good wing off the bench. And I think that that's going to be a huge difference maker. I think him and Buddy Boeheim really showed up in this exhibition. I'm not even looking at the stats necessarily as much as just having them be able to step in and hit shots, especially when, you know, Battle and O'Shea Brissett weren't necessarily doing so. They still managed to get theirs. But I think in general, like, it's a work in progress, but not a bad work in progress. It's one that already is going to operate at a bare minimum at what we did last year. And I think from there, like, only improve. So I'm pretty high on what we've got going this year. If the defense can play at the same level it did last year, we have something really special on our hands.
I'd be very surprised if the offense wasn't a good step up from last season. I mean, we're going to go into the year, and we haven't seen Jalen Terry yet, but I think odds are our fourth best player is either Elijah Hughes or Frank Howard, and that's pretty scary because I think that there's a reasonable universe in which either one of them is like a third team all ACC-er this year. So when that's where you're starting from, and then you throw in Terry, who is going to probably be the most talented point guard on the roster, even if he doesn't start, throw in, you know, Buddy shooting off the bench, this team should be quite good. I'm quite excited. And it's not even really based off the exhibition. It's the exhibition showed us a lot about players we didn't know a lot about, and we know plenty about Battle. And I mean, Brissett was awesome in the exhibition, but we know what he's going to be, and it looks like he'll be a walking double-double again this year. Terry's still like the one wild card just based on his injury, but I think, I mean, the expectations for him are pretty high, but luckily, unlike a lot of the blue chip point guards we've brought in the last couple years, he's not being asked to start right away. I do think he'll have a big role. Buddy, I think, is going to, I mean, he looks better than I thought for sure. So there's just a lot to like, and I think the offense will be a lot better, and I think we have just a lot of very dangerous options.
I would agree, and that is something we did not have last year. I'm going to save my season prediction for the other podcast, but Dan, your season prediction, wins and losses number, and where does SU's season wrap up?
Ooh, I haven't even gone through the whole schedule, so I'm going to hold off on a wins and losses.
Fair enough.
I'll tip that to you guys before. I'm sure there'll be a post going up soon. I think we will be in the top 15 or so almost all year. And I think we'll finish, I'll say we're going to get a double bye in the ACC. I think, you know, I'll go Elite Eight. I think we'll make the Elite Eight this year.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think, as I said, I'll get into my prediction on the other show. I think a lot of that is going to depend on matchups and things like that. I could easily see us finishing in the Sweet 16 this year with a better squad because a matchup just didn't work out. And I could see a lot of people getting pissed off about that.
I think this was like basically in the late 2000s, early 2010s. Like, if you get to a place where the Sweet 16 is a baseline expectation and then you work from there, I think that's a totally fine place to be.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. Well, cool. This was shorter than most podcasts, but I think that's fine. I think we covered a lot of ground. Dan, anything else you want to add before we depart?
No, I mean, we were also a little more on topic. It's aside from the random drifts into Syracuse Wake Forest history, which was still vaguely on topic.
Yeah.
I'm you know, very excited. I was very happy pretty much all day yesterday once the polls came out, which, you know, shouldn't really be a thing that we care that much about. They don't mean anything in reality, but it's just another thing you can sell about this program, and it's something tangible to grab onto about the progress versus just like, oh, we're watching the games and we know this looks better. Now, like, there's an indication that, A, other people are paying attention. I'm sure it's going to be a thing we hammer. Recruits are probably going to be sick of us talking about the rankings in a couple days, because that's all we'll hear about from our staff. But it's just like, it's nice to finally like get some recognition for a thing that's been building for a couple years now, and hopefully gratification for the more fair weather segment of the fan base that, you know, needs to be given a lot of indication of things going well. So again, hopefully we beat Wake Forest this week. Hopefully it looks pretty good. We stay in the rankings, and then, you know, a ranked Syracuse team playing for the first time at the Dome since 2001 on a Friday night in a game they absolutely should win, but the opponent's still like kind of a name. Let's get some people after that game, please.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, think about all the bad things that we can hold Louisville accountable for. Think about all the times Lamar Jackson embarrassed us. The
damn hurdle flip, which still gets played like every week, I feel like, even though he's been in the NFL now for half a season.
Yeah, I think that would be nice to win that one. It would be nice to win it in front of a full house.
Maybe we can get Bobby Petrino fired. That's like on the table.
Let's do that.
We whacked Louisville by like 40. which is, again, could happen. Louisville's real bad. I'd be okay with that. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, let's make that happen, Syracuse. First, let's beat Wake Forest, though.
Yes, 100%. We're not Dave Doran. We're not getting Clausen fired.
No, we're not. Dan, thank you as always for joining. Another fun episode.
Yes, glad we were able to get this one up early because I'm sure everyone is still like in the post top 25 glow, and as they should be.
Of course. So everyone, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, or wherever else to listen to podcasts. And go Orange.
Go Orange.